Okay, next up we have Peter telling us about vector search in modern databases.
Okay. Well, hello everyone. My name is Peter Zaitsev. I was supposed to speak here together with Sergey Nikolaev, who is actually much better expert in this space, but unfortunately he couldn't get a visa, so guess what? You are stuck with me. And we are going to talk about the vector search. How many of you are familiar with the vector searches? Oh, well, that's a good number of hands, some not, so that's a fun audience to have. First, let me maybe start with ruining the suspense and kind of showing a highlight what is the state of a vector search in a variety of databases. And I think what is interesting happening here is what we have, the number of new databases started in the last few years, which is specifically focused on vector search and related applications. And then also at the same time, we can see a lot of mainstream databases have added support for vector search, right? You can see that starting back in 2019, which is actually relatively recently and relatively quickly, right? I think that is a very interesting because databases are often rather conservative, kind of relatively slower moving product. And what that reminds me is something what we saw with JSON, right? We saw the databases like MongoDB came and really got a lot of developers' hearts and minds. And then later on, JSON support came to pretty much every major database out there, right, and was also added as SQL standard. Now, what is their unfortunate omission here, what you can see, is the MySQL, right, which, well, you can say, well, MySQL is now owned by Oracle, which is a big, fat, slow-moving corporation. Right, so we're not doing that. But there's another problem is what with MySQL, it actually exists with a HeatWave solution, which is cloud-only Oracle's MySQL variant, right? And it's, I think, not very clear to what extent it will come in the MySQL proper. At the same time, MariaDB is working on solution in the MySQL space. The PlanetScale announced what we are going to implement vector search. So if not in the MySQL community itself, it will come in some variants, right? And obviously, if you look at the PostgreSQL, I think that's always a wonderful ecosystem, right? If something is done in PostgreSQL, there's like a multiple way of doing this stuff, and there have been number of vector search extensions created, but the PGVector seems to be one which is getting the most support and most of attention those days. Now, what is also interesting, what we can see with vector search being so hot, right, with AI, is some databases like Elastic in this case here, they are pretty much focusing, calling themselves the vector search database first, right, and the full text search database second, right? So I think for me that was very interesting to see that that change. Well, anyway, with kind of a big picture out of the way, let's talk a little bit about the vectors and vector search, right, and why suddenly this becomes kind of important those days. Now, if you learn, I don't know, let's say, is it like a high school algebra or something else, right? You probably know what the vectors are, right? We can think about, you know, 2D, 3D space, that's all very clear. But also, if we think about that, in a, we can think about vector as something as represent colors, right? As in a software engineers, you probably know, like, well, colors, this is red, green, blue, right? We often encode that in one byte each, right? And that actually can be seen as a vector in a color space, right? And we also can think about similarity of colors as similarity between the different vectors. Now, if you think about the vectors, There are actually a number of different approaches how you can think about what vectors are being similar and the same, right? Like there is like Euclidean distance. But if you think what is the most common this case is a cosine similarity, right? For example, if you go and ask our the thought leaders in AI space, open AI, say, hey guys, then I'm using your API, what you suggest as a distance between vectors, they would suggest you to use their cosine similarity. Now let's talk a little bit about the history, right, and how they have been used in a database, and specifically in their information retrieval space, right? Vectors are actually not something which is suddenly became new, right, as you may think of vector search databases, right? If you think about the full-text search application specifically, there have been vectors used for a long time, right? For example, if you, one approach would be to look at a sparse vector and say, hey, we have a document, we can actually look at all the words we have in the dictionary and let's say state the frequency of that word in that vector. And then if you want to compute the similarity between two different documents, well, we can essentially look at cosine similarity between those two kind of massive sparse vectors, right? That was something which existed for, again, very very long time. You can find that in, you know, Lucene, Elastic libraries, and so on and so forth. Now, if you think about what we use in vector search for much more, is we are looking at their more of a dense vectors, which are called vector embeddings, right? Which are different, right? What is interesting in those kind of sparse vectors, like also referred as a bag of words, we can actually think about the every dimension in a vector as a mean something, right? We can say, oh, this dimension means if a word, you know, cat was seen in a document and how many times, right, or a relative frequency, right? Then we compute the dense vectors, right, or embeddings. What that means is we take a document, right, we learn that from a model which generates those embeddings, and then we don't really understand very well what those different bits mean, right? What we know, though, is what the similar documents should be close by, right, how this system works. Or it doesn't have to be even a document, right? Like if you think about their, let's say, image recognition process, right? I can train the system with, let's say, you know, faces of a bunch of people, though I know it's kind of totally illegal in Europe, but let's say, imagine we are in China and we are going to do that, right? Then we can look at, you know, vector embeddings, computer of somebody's face, right? And look at what is a people of people in the database it looks the most like, right? That should give us give us the closest match. So here is also something interesting. This is embeddings, which are computed for the single word documents, right, using one of the open source frameworks by Glove model by the guy called Jay Alamar, right? And what is interesting in this case is what we get, you know, certain, you know, cardinality. We see, you know, bunch of words. We don't really quite know, right, what those different dimensions means, right? And it's kind of, I think, very common in AI, right? We know those things work, but we can't really figure out how exactly this works, right? And then you can think about and rationalize about what those things could be. Like, for example, all of those things have something to do with humans besides water, right? And then you can see there is those, you know, if you see like a straight blue line, which is blue for everybody by that, they say, well, maybe that is something which is related to humans, right? Or we can see something else, right? Like a king and queen, right? They also have a lot of similarity. We may say, well, you know what, AI, we don't really exactly know how, but it may have something to, you know, think about there. The royalty. Okay, so if you think about their vector search, right, in a nutshell, we have vectors that typically will be dense vectors which came from the AI applications. That would be some embeddings, which in some database systems, right, they are, they focus on supporting operations with those embedding systems, right? For example, Postgres, PG vector, it's just say, hey guys, I don't know how you compute those vectors. That is not our problem, right? We're just going to help you to operate with them. Some of the more advanced features, they may, the vector databases, they also may support creating embeddings. Maybe even, you know, from a database itself, right, especially in the cloud database, being able to, you know, call open AI's API in the background to compute those embeddings, embeddings for you. So anyway, let's talk more about the technology. How does that work, right? So what exactly operations do we typically see in the vector search applications, right? Well, typically we do have a bunch of vectors stored, we have a vector on input, right? And we are looking to find the vector which are closest closest to it, right? Through the distance we want to define, right, which is typically is a cosine, cosine distance, right? Now, if you look at this problem, if you of course you can just, you know, as with about everything, right, you can just scan all the data and find the closest vectors, right? And that is, you know, fantastic way you can do it. You can do it exact, but it is also very slow, right? So that means why it's not really used in practice. Instead we are using special index structures, right? This HNSW, right, that seems to be the most popular algorithm, right, which industry seems to be coalescing about. And I think what is important to note about that is, compared, like, different from many other things in database, this index is not exact. Right, so it gives us good accuracy, but it does not guarantee what that always will give you the, you know, let's say the closest vector when you ask it, right? And if you are familiar with database, you can say, ooh, that looks strange. But in AI applications, how those vectors are computed, right, they're not, right, really exact any to begin with, right? So these are quite usable. Okay, so let's talk about those solutions, right? What we are really using this for, right? As I mentioned, the most common features in this case would be found in your nearest. There are some other more kind of global operations in this case, which can be used in terms of clustering the data or classification, which is supported by advanced features, advanced systems. Okay, let me show maybe in this case a little bit of example, and here we'll use their an interesting way. We'll use the multi-core search system, right? That's where one Sergey is created for, but we'll connect to that through a MySQL protocol, right? That's what it's for, and we can see what we can go ahead and let's say include or create the table, as you can see, right? With defining the float vector, conventional database type, but something what this engine support, right? And you would see typically vector search would support some sort of that vector store of functionality, right? And then we can find their distance between the given vector we have as well as the vectors in the database, right? And it can give us the information, right? So what we actually had in this case is there different images which would run through creating embedding for them, and then you can see what was that? Yeah, I think that was like an image of a bag, right? Which was saying, hey, you know what? It's much more similar to a yellow bag compared to their to a white bag, right? Which you can that is a kind of pretty common what we have. Okay. I mentioned what when you speak about embedded computation, right? There, if you look at especially non-vector databases, not specialized databases like Postgres, where we would say, hey guys, you guys can use external encoding, but they don't see that as a database problem, right? You process some information out there, your favorite Python, the external API, or use some local open source model, that's fine. Though, there are some libraries, right, with Microsoft REST library, right, they are being added. And I think over time, of course, if our desire to enable developer simplicity, we'll see more of a direct support. Now, something else I think what is interesting about their embedding and the information retrieval tasks specifically. I think what is very interesting, if you look at the search applications, for years there have been a lot of time spent about sort of like a hard coding, where, you know, structure of a language, defining synonyms, defining antonyms, right, and so on and so forth, right, and so we can run our search quality. The other approach, though, is we can use the AI, right, for with this this approach, right? So we can look at the matching document through through embeddings, right? And that really allows to avoid a lot of that thing which has to be manual processing with a good quality. But what is interesting there, though, is this new generation AI search may not be best, and also it may not be the most effective, right? Because if you think about that, if I have like a lot of a document in my database, right, billions, right, then actually the search can be relatively expensive. So one of the approaches which is used is dual approaches, right? And you can say, well, we may be getting, if you know, like a top 1,000 documents or something through like a legacy kind of frequency based search methods, right? And then we can use AI to rank those, right? And you can see what that sort of like a combination. That's like a last cone, like a Vespa hybrid, right? It shows better results, right, on many benchmarks. Okay. Well, close. Thank you. Very usable, both in information retrieval task as well as many other applications, and what we see also what the vector support in databases in relatively early stages, right? It just happened implemented in the last few years, right? I would say what the current implementation is relatively basics, and we would see a lot more, I would say, features, right? As we kind of figure out, right, what we actually want to empower us. There is going to be continuing innovation in this data structures to support us in the fast vector search applications, right, and as well improve accuracy. Well, that's all I have. Right, you had some. Yes, the gentleman was about to show me 0 minutes. Yeah, and if there is any questions, I would be happy to try to answer.
Any questions?
Yes.
Hi. Okay. So, given the fact that, so you say that databases are going to transition from just supporting externally modeled embeddings to generating internally. But given the fact that we see a lot of many advanced models that generate embeddings, for example, the GPT.
Yes,
GPT
yeah.
is a machine that basically takes entire concepts, translates very efficiently into embeddings, and then outputs also. And is the standard, like you provide a single external embedding generator model compared to a traditional word-to-vec, mm-hmm. and then everyone can just benefit from an on-par model.
Well, yes, yeah, absolutely. Well, but what I'm saying in this case, I think it's being supported, right, may mean different things, right? I am not saying, oh, you know what, we should expect Postgres incorporate inside that all the possible models, right? I think the same would be say, like, if, let's say, Python support those things, right? That just means it's easier to do from a Python standpoint, right? So now, if you think about this case, if I want to generate embedding, even for data I have in a database, I kind of have to do that that externally, right? What I'm saying is, well, get some sort of database, you know, was us by talking externally.
Not
created. So that is what I'm speaking about. Make sense?
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a bit.
Thanks. Thanks for the talk. As a database developer, how do you deal with a very rapidly moving target of both algorithms mm-hmm. and storage formats? In the sense, do you deprecate rapidly? Because if today you have a KNN function that has this some certain API, and a month later, you know, ML is a very rapidly moving target, you have a better KNN function, and same goes with dense format,
that is a good point. Now, I think what is interesting in what you're saying, right, you know, thing on one extent, it's always interesting when you have this, the industry in like an early stage, because on one extent, things are changing quickly. On the other hand, often people implement something, they put it in production, it's good enough, and the fact what that kind of is a better state of art out there, that doesn't mean what they want to change, right? And that means, well, like at least in the database world, right, we always have to say, well, you know what, there are certain things we would love to kill, but actually some very big corporations already deployed in production, and they're not freaking changing that in the next 10 years. Right. So reality, what that's going to be, right, I think, is the evolution on that side, but then we'll still have to have a compatibility. I think if you look at, I mentioned like a Postgres, like a PG vector extensions, they already support like a whole bunch of a different options in this case, right? So, so yeah, I think that's what we'll expect.
Okay, hi, here. Can you go back to the embeddings slide where you showed the similarity between queen and queen?
Between what?
King, I think. The similarities between queen and king, I think. Or it was like the first...
This one? Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Here you mentioned you use ADA, I think.
What do you use?
ChatGPT embeddings.
No, so this one is actually Glove model, right? That was one of the open source models,
okay,
right?
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, in this case, I think that is just like as an example, right? I think what you wanted to look in this case to visualize, right? I mean, when you say, hey guys, you generate those kind of embeddings, and they do not particularly mean anything, right? But can you just plot them? You know, as we plot, let's say, you know, DNA of a frog and a fish, right? Can we see something maybe in in this case, right? So case to do here, right? To visualize how particular embedding generation model.
Right. Yeah, no, I find it really helpful also for...
What's that?
I find it really helpful also for like my future student, mm-hmm. because like it really grasps the essence of embedding and similarities, I think.
Yeah, I mean, again, like in this case, that is just to visualize, to show people what that things look like, right? And my point I was trying to make is, on one extent, we cannot really state what exactly of those dimensions, what it corresponds to, right? But as a human, we can, you know, try to rationalize, oh, there is, seems to be like, you know, something,
also,
you know, something there, right?
Also because ADA, the embedding of OpenAI, has like 1,500 features.
So it's, well,
like,
that's right.
Really,
yes.
Difficult to like.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So, like, in this case, that was specifically kind of cut, right, to having less features, right? Yes. It's because, you know, 1,500 or like, well, like 3,000, right, for large. Yeah, that would be too many to display.
Okay.